today. If you're not worried about your financial position, should you be? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Steve from Canstar. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Martin.
Great to see you on again, and we've got the audio and the visual working really well today, so that's great. Now, yes. You guys have published some rather concerning research which said that actually, was it 95% of people were getting a bit twitchy about their financial position?
Yeah, 95 say they're worried about their financial position, and you know, in some ways we've never done it better, but in other ways we've never done it worse than currently. So there are things worrying them, different things, and you can see with the environment why that would be. First up, inflation and whether it will hurt their future standard of living, you know, the cost of living. Well, yeah, that should be worrying. We've just had a big announcement of inflation at 3.4% or something for the year. So, yeah, that's sort of rearing its ugly head again. And then there's job losses. Of course, during COVID, you would expect job losses. And coming in at number three is low interest rates, and what that does to my cost of living as well. So that, I guess, is mainly retirees worrying about living off term deposits, etc.
Yeah, and of course that's one thing that people often forget, right? Although there's all the focus on mortgage rates and mortgages and buying property, you know, that's only a third of households, right? There are two thirds that either are renting or have owned their property outright. They're much more interested, if they've got savings, on what's happening to savings rates, you know, the hidden pain, as it were, of very low rates.
Yeah, and all the more if you happen to be a retiree who's supplementing the pension with you know, a couple of $100,000 worth of term deposit. So that's the group that really hurts. If you're saving for a first home, you're not getting any of that leg up with a little bit of interest. You're actually finding that I've got to do all the hard yards myself with my savings. I don't get any help with bank interest at the moment. So there are a couple of sectors that lose more than others, but fixed interest, as that is savings with the bank, is not a very lucrative investment at the moment.
Yeah, and, you know, 95%, that's a lot of households, that's a lot of people, right? And what I find interesting is there's an official narrative that everything in the garden is wonderful. Okay, we've got the, you know, the lockdowns, but that's going to be temporary. The Reserve Bank, in giving evidence today to the Parliament, said, look, you know, by end of the year, we'll see the economy bouncing back. We'll probably have a negative quarter, but that's about all. I just think that they're not really close to what the real situation is for real households.
Yeah, and they use that underlying measure of inflation too, which says to them, look, it's no time for us to be putting rates up because the underlying inflation rate is not within our band. Well, that's okay, but people also look at their standard of living and say, well, hold on, it looks a lot worse than that to us. So I think, you know, I'm not saying they're out of touch at all, but I think it's easier to ignore those realities when you're living on, you know, a reasonable salary than when you're sort of struggling a bit and when you're worried about your job as well.
Absolutely. Well, I often talk about the K shape and others. There are a number of people doing it quite well. A lot of bankers and, you know, central bankers possibly doing it quite well, thank you very much, with large salaries and, you know, no real concern. But there are a lot of people who are really up against it. I'm also seeing in my surveys there's a high correlation between where the lockdowns are in Sydney, particularly, you know, around Fairfield and now southwestern Sydney. Mm. That's high areas of mortgage stress that was already there. So it seems to me that there is an interesting correlation between the current breakouts of COVID and high financial pressure on households, because they have to work. They've got no choice. You know, it's very much hand to mouth. And it's that group, more broadly, I think, that probably isn't getting the airplay. And, you know, with all of these policies that are being talked about, I'm afraid that I think some people are falling through the cracks, unfortunately, small businesses and a lot of people on fragmented, you know, jobs, multiple jobs, hand-to-mouth type jobs. And that's a large proportion of the population.
It's huge, actually. We did a survey some time back now, but this might have changed. It's probably worse, actually. And that survey said, look, It was asking people about, you know, how much money they had left over, how long they could survive if they lost their job, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of people were saying, look, a month. It was something like a quarter of people were saying they could last a month. So they didn't have anything put aside. Now, that means they'd be giving their credit cards a belting for a couple of months if they did lose their jobs. And, of course, this latest lockdown in Sydney, people were saying, well, look, gee, it's all very well to say don't go out and work, but I've only got a month's worth of savings here, so, you know, I've got to do something, haven't I? And that's the pressure people are under. And we don't condone people breaking that the curfews, et cetera, but that's the pressure people are under.
Yeah, it's the realities of, you know, real life for real people on the on the ground. And like I say, I do feel sometimes there's a bit of a disconnect with the high-level political discourse and what it's like for real people.
So, right? So what you're saying, Martin, is that the 95% of us who don't work for the RBA or the government are feeling stress, and the other 5% work for the RBA or the government.
Well, I think that's probably about right, you know, and certainly there's discussion in the US of the so-called 1%, right, which is, you know, the creme de la creme of the creme de la creme, right, saying, well, my incomes have gone up, you know, my savings have performed really well, I've been able to increase my wealth. And look, to an extent, we're seeing that in Australia in my surveys too, there are people who've done really, really well. The stock markets have done well, they've invested, etc. But it's the minority relative to the bulk of the population. And unfortunately, the reality is that there are a number of people who are finding it very difficult at the moment.
Yeah, there are. And what we've seen is the classic asset inflation. So that means your share prices have gone up, your home values have gone up, and no inflation in wages. So the share of wealth that belongs to those with assets or has gone to those with assets has gone up dramatically over the last year or two. And, you know, you look at this recovery, look where the stock market is, it's all-time high. And that's they're the group that have investments are actually the ones increasing their wealth. Now, the saving grace in all this is that around the world, we have about the most advanced superannuation market. And fortunately, we're sharing in that through the wealth built up in our super, which we don't see, of course, until we're 65, 67. It might be a lot, lot older in years to come.
Well, unless you are in parts of the government who believe that you should raise your superannuation today to be able to go and buy a first-time home.
Yeah, that's right. It's an interesting question, that one, because I actually have some empathy with it, in that you can have your cake and eat it, because you can use that. Raiding your super is a bad thing if you put it towards a house or any other purpose. Survival during COVID was even that was arguable, but this proposal that you can use an element of your super as a deposit to underwrite the bank's risk, so that you can borrow below, you know, at 95% or something, and not have to pay $12,000 worth of insurance. That's an interesting proposal, because provided you get your loan down, you make your repayments, and you don't default, you've sort of had your cake and you've eaten it as well, because you've still been earning on your super money. You haven't reduced it, but you've got into a house earlier than you might otherwise have done. So I think there's a reasonable argument for that. I actually quite like the concept. Obviously, some people are going to lose their super and their house, but I think that's always going to be a minority.
And I think it's about being cautious, right? So as with all of these potential schemes and opportunities, if you know what you're doing and go into it with your eyes open, then you can manage the risk. But unfortunately, I have a feeling that, you know, people get lured into it and they don't think it through, and then suddenly discover, like the homeland packages, right? Suddenly people were offered a lot of money to go and buy a homeland package. What I'm now seeing there is that the costs of the construction are rising and the delivery dates going way, way, way out, because of the fact you can't get the materials. So it's that people are suddenly finding that the financial proposition they thought they were entering into is not quite what they've got.
Yeah, that's right. And people buying off plans and things can be caught in awful, awful positions down the track. But they don't necessarily get what they wanted, but they also can be in a position where the builder fails and they keep their deposit, but they've been out of the market for a while. And, of course, they find themselves overcommitted with cost overruns and all those things. So it's high risk, really very high risk. It's, you know, life is like a balloon. You put pressure on one side and something bulges out the other. And that's what we've seen with all of these housing costs. Now, the government has said, look, here's a whole lot of cash to go and build a house. And where has that cash gone? Well, it's gone into the hands largely of builders and building suppliers because prices have gone up because there have been shortages. So, you know, it's sort of a lot of these programs don't actually reach the people that they're meant to reach.
No, I agree. And I actually think that a lot of it was done to support the construction sector rather than actually the end users, despite the fact, of course, it was dressed up as we're helping you to buy your new home earlier sort of thing. Yeah, that's convenient political speak for we're helping our construction mates. Now, there's two questions I want to go on to before we close. The first one is this. When people have financial pressures, you know, we've covered before, there are some things that they should think about doing, right? And the first is to make sure that they understand what money's coming in and what money is going out. Because a lot of people don't have cash flows. They don't actually know that. And there are some tools available to be able to actually quickly record and analyze what you're spending your money on. Because quite often what you find is that some of the money you're spending, you don't need to spend. It's discretionary. There's others that you have to spend. So there's an argument there. And the other is the old apathy tax comes back again, right?
Oh, yeah. The apathy tax comes in all the time, and I shake my head. Over a period of 6 months, look at all your finances. You can save yourself a heck of a lot of money. Your average home loan rate is around 1.28% higher than the lowest rate. Now, that can mean on an average loan of around $400,000, $200 on a month. That's a huge amount. Don't give that to the bank. Keep it, put it towards your budget, put it towards savings. Then you've got the insurances. By the time you work through all of your insurances, you know, house, home contents, car, health insurance, all of those, you can save yourself a couple of $100 here, another $300 there. You know, overall, $3,000 is not a difficult sum to save on your finances. And it makes a huge difference. And it doesn't change your lifestyle at all. It doesn't. You don't have to skimp and save. You don't have to tighten the belt. You've got the same lifestyle. You've just saved money.
Absolutely. And the, what's interesting about that, your bandwidth faded a little bit, so you've gone mini, but that's fine. It's quite funny. We were talking about Yoda earlier on, right? You know, very small but perfectly formed. Look, the fact is...
Do I go green as well?
You haven't gone green yet. I'll let you know if you do. But what's interesting is that, you know, there are simple steps. Another one that I discovered, I actually had my insurance company contact me yesterday and say, because of the lockdown, we're going to give you back 15% of your annual premium because you're not traveling as much. That's interesting. Yeah. I wonder how many other insurers companies are and how many should. And is that people something that perhaps people should do as well? Give your insurance company a call and say, hey, look, I'm not traveling as much as before. What about reducing my premium?
This is your car insurance, I guess. You could also argue the same for house and contents because if you're at home, you're far less likely to be burgled. Look, I haven't heard that one specifically, but it's an interesting thing that they've done that voluntarily and haven't taken it to the bottom line.
Exactly. It was proactively. I mean, you know, kudos to them, that's all I can say.
Absolutely, yeah. Medibank, shouldn't mention the brand, I suppose, but Medibank Private did the same thing with health insurance. They said, look, we've had lower claims over the period of COVID. We're going to return our members this much. And that was also proactive and voluntary, and they've said, well, you know, here it is back. It's a one-off, but you know what? That's sharing the benefit as well as the pain, I guess, of COVID.
Now, just let's touch on rates before we close off. Now, mortgage rates are really interesting, right? Because there are some still very good low rates around, but fixed rates are still going up, and it's getting harder for some people to get the mortgages that they used to.
Yes. Yeah. With fixed rates, we've seen something pretty interesting this month. The action slowed up a bit, I've got to say, but we saw about the same number, something like 18 went up and about 15 went down. Now, what they've done in some cases is they've said, look, we'll bump up the longer-term rate and we'll reduce the short-term rate. And there are some very sharp 12-month and two-year rates around. 12-month rates are almost not fixed, frankly. But the trend has absolutely been, I think almost every lender has increased their 4 and 5 year rates over the last 2 months or so. Yep. So overwhelmingly at the longer end, the longer term end, we've seen rate increases. 2 and 3 year rates are still low. That's where we've seen the lowest average, 2 in particular, which says we're at the bottom of the cycle, rates are going up, but they're not going up for quite a while yet. You know, the Reserve Bank is still saying 3 years.
And what about deposit rates? Are there any good news for term deposit holders yet?
Have a guess how many increased their savings rate last month? The answer is none.
No. I'm not totally surprised.
No, you're not. You can get 1.6% on a term deposit, and that's for 5 years. Now, I wouldn't suggest that too many people would want to put away their money, lock it in, at 1.6% for 5 years. The highest savings rate is 1.35%, and unless you're below 30, in which case you might be able to get 3%. But we've seen no savings rates go up, and we've seen a number just being trimmed by the 5 or 10 basis points. More of the same that we've been seeing now for 3 years.
Yeah, and goes right back to where we started the conversation, right? No surprise then, if you're reliant on term deposits, you're probably eating your capital rather than eating your interest, because frankly, you'll be starving if you're just spending the interest that you used to have. And the worrying point, of course, is that's not going to change, is it? You know, we are not going to see a significant rebound in terms of term deposit rates.
No, it's a while off. I mean, the Reserve Bank is still saying 3 years. I think it might end up being 2.5 years or something, but that's quibbling. The reality is that we probably will see home loan rates drift up a little bit, anticipating a Reserve Bank cash rate increase, but we won't see much happen in the way of deposits. They might receive the Reserve Bank by a month or two, but that's probably about it. So we're looking at 2.5 or 3 years of low interest rates, and hence this big concern amongst people relying upon savings that they're not going to be able to make ends meet.
Absolutely. So the moral of the story is you can't allow the the Reserve Bank moving rates to get you out of difficulty if you are in financial stress at the moment. What you've got to do is you've got to start taking actions on your own behalf. Look at your balance sheet, look at your cash flows, select, prioritize, and shop around to see whether there are actually better deals out there, because if you do shop around, then you can actually relieve some of the pain. But you've got to take the initiative. You can't just sit back and hope the Reserve Bank's going to rescue you.
No, you absolutely can't. I mean, whether you're a borrower or a saver, the realities are that you can always, 99% of people can always do better somewhere in their personal balance sheet by getting a better rate than they had. And it's your responsibility to do that. You never wait for the Reserve Bank to say, now it's time to get a little bit more interest. And at the same time, look at your household budget. Now, we have an app on our CanStar app these days that does that. But it's also common sense. Just look at your household budget. Where are my outgoings? And where am I getting value for my lifestyle? Don't waste it. Because the reality is we've got people in some cases, with savers, with retirees, you've got to sit this one out, but do the best you can in between time. Rates will come back, but meanwhile, you've knocked down your principal. The amount that you've got saved is being eroded every week of these low rates.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, I appreciate your time today and those insights. And, I want to underscore again that it's down to people taking a bit of a personal responsibility for their finances and their budgeting and, the decisions they take. It still surprises me that less than half of the people that I survey have any sense of their own cash flow. And it's such an important thing, particularly now with incomes very much going to be going in a holding pattern at best for quite some time, and with cost of living rising significantly higher than what the CPI would suggest it will be. So therefore, to try and square the circle, there are some steps that you have to take. But I have to say, it takes time and effort to do it. But, the app you mentioned and the rates on CanStar and are an excellent place to start, because you've got huge amounts of information, which makes the painful journey a little bit easier.
Oh, look, you and I both remember the pre-computer, the pre-internet period, and the only way you could actually find out about rates was that you'd look in the newspaper at who was advertising, and then you'd you'd pick up the phone and phone the local branch of every bank you could think of and see what rate you could get. Boy, it's never been easier.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, good old internet, when it works, it can certainly, you know, help you save some money if you know where to look. And if you remember that the apathy tax is alive and well, and, you know, on the other hand, if you take the initiative, then there is opportunity. Thanks for your time today, Steve. And
thanks,
I look forward to picking up next time. See you
later.
Cheers.
See you.
Bye.